With morning came riders of the Golden Company, and Aesil Madeira's senior captain. He had not finished talking to the Duke when the word ran through the camp. Madeira was at Sibili, already in position with Golden Company and the Pliuni volunteers. Westland troops were at Sibili as well. Pax felt a rising excitement. She did not doubt Cha would fall, and after it, the Honeycat's home city, Sibili. Pax thought of him looking from his palace windows to see the banners of his enemies. She squinted against the early sun and saw the city wall crowded with men. Smoke rolled up from the sappers' work near the northwest corner of the city. Pax saw archers lean to shoot into the roofed shelter. Their own archers replied. An outcry rose from the main gate tower. Siniava's black and yellow banner sagged from its pole, slipped back toward the wall. Someone up there waved a smaller flag. Pax could not see the colors. The Count's herald blew a long blast. It was answered from the tower and followed by even more noise from within the walls. By the time they entered the city, Pax had heard that a faction favoring Andrasat had opened the gates. Siniava's men still fought, but they were hampered by the factions opposing them. Despite the warning, Pax had not imagined how chaotic this could be. She soon found out. Just as they came to the first side street, a body of armed men rushed out to form a line across it. These were Siniavas, armed with pikes. They had scarcely engaged the enemy when another band, bowmen in plain leather, with a twist of blue and gold on their helmets, charged out of a building behind the enemy line and fired into the back of the pikemen. 15 or so fell at once, hit squarely in the back at close range. One arrow hit Pox's shield with enough force to drive the head through. Another struck someone behind her. She heard the yell, half pain, half fury. The enemy fighters whirled to meet this attack, and the front ranks of Pox's cohort charged, trying to run them over before the archers made another dangerous shot. Several more fights interrupted their progress to the city center. Twice, they fought their way out of attempted ambushes. Bodies littered the streets, men, women, children, animals, caught in the street fighting and left behind when the flood of violence passed. At last, beyond a mass of frightened people crammed into a large square, Pax caught sight of the Halveric banner. As her cohort spread around its side of the square, a small boy broke away and darted toward the street they had left. Roth made a grab at him and missed. Pax swung her shield across his path. He ran into it headlong and slipped to the ground, crying. Pax sheathed her sword and reached down to help him up. She heard a cry from the crowd as the terrified boy tried to twist away from her. "Here now, I won't hurt you," she said. The boy screamed, flailing at her with pudgy fists. "Stop that," she added. He froze in her grip, staring at her with wide eyes. "Now, what did you run for? Don't you know you should have stayed with your sister, was it?"
"I'll take him, Pax," said Roth. "His sis is all upset."
But as Roth reached out, the child started fighting again.
"I'd better," said Pax. "Now, lad, be quiet. You're not hurt, and you won't be."
He calmed again, and Pax glanced around for the girl. She was standing only a few yards away, held there by a serious-faced Carrie.
"Let's go back to her now, lad. And you stay with her, you hear?"
But my puppy."
He choked on the words and started to cry.
"Your puppy? You lost your dog?"
His accent was thick, but Pax thought she understood. He nodded.
"He was mine, my very own, and he's not here. He got lost."
Pax thought of the dogs she'd seen, dead in the gutters. "Lad, you stay with your sister. Find your puppy later, not now."
"But he's got lost. He'll be frightened without me."
Pax thought it was the other way around, but knew it would do no good to argue. "Even so, what's your name?"
"Sari. Sari asked, really."
"Well, Sari, even though your puppy may be frightened, you stay with your sister. She'll help you find your puppy later. Now promise you'll stay with her." The boy nodded finally. Pax thought he was the same age as her youngest brother, the year she'd left home. She put a hand on his shoulder and steered him toward the girl. "Come along now." The girl grabbed him and held him close.
"I tried to tell her, Pax, that you wouldn't hurt him," said Carrie, sounding worried. "I don't know why she thought—"
Pax waved him to silence. The girl looked up, her eyes blurred by tears.
"I think he'll stay with you now," said Pax, "but keep a close grip on him for a few hours."
The girl nodded,
tightening her grasp until the boy squealed.
"Please, don't take him,"
she begged.
"Please don't. He won't harm ye none."
"We won't take him. What would we want with a child that size?" But the panic on the girl's face made Pox uneasy for days. What were these people used to, that they feared intentional harm to so small a child? The next day, as Halveric Company rode away to Sibili, Pox found herself hard at work in a warehouse, cataloging plunder for the Duke's company. This time, at least, she did not have to drag it out, but counting sacks of wool and goat hair and barrels of wine, beer, oil berries and brine and oil was a hot, dusty, boring job. They finished this chore in one day. The next was spent loading supplies for Sibili and repairing damaged equipment. Pox got a new shield, as did Carrie, and Volya had snapped a sword tip against a wall. Jennets came up while Pox was helping Volya wrap the grip of her sword. He had a lumpy bundle of shiny yellow silk. "Wait until you see this," he said, dropping it on the ground. It clinked. He worked at the knot, one-handed. Carrie reached to help. "Thanks. There, look at that." They looked at a miscellaneous collection of bracelets, rings, coins, and little carved discs of ivory or shell. Jennets grinned. "That's what I get for being one-armed right now, not strong enough for the heavy stuff. Kefir had me working through the goldsmithies and jewelers' shops with him, and he said to take this much and to share it with my friends, if I wanted to keep any. I knew that you, Pox, were stuck in those warehouses, and Carrie and Volya hadn't found anything better than a stray silver, so here I am, take your pick."
"Is it really gold?"
asked Volya doubtfully. "I think so. It's soft, like gold, and it doesn't look like copper. It's heavy." Carrie reached over and picked up a ring with a pale green stone. "I wonder what this is." "I don't know, but let's split it up before I lose my generous impulses. Pox, you choose first. You're the veteran." Pox looked over the small pile. "I could take this bracelet for my sister," she said tentatively. It was made in a pattern of linked leaves, with tiny blue stones between them. "We'll take turns," she went on. "Go on then, Carrie. I'll take this ring."
"I like this," said Volya.
She had found a little gold fish, arched as if it were leaping, with a loop formed by the dorsal fin to hold a chain. Jennets held out his left hand, with a heavy gold ring set with onyx on the first finger. "I cheated," he said. "I took my favorite out first." They laughed and went on choosing. When they'd finished, Jennets folded the square of silk and tucked it into his tunic. "I feel much safer now," he said. "I was afraid I'd have a greedy fit, and you've done all the fighting. By the way, Pox."
"Hmm?"
"My arm doesn't hurt anymore. When can I come back to regular duty?"
"What did the surgeons tell you?"
"Oh, well, 6 weeks altogether. But it's been 3 and it doesn't hurt. I don't want to miss Sibili, and I feel well enough. I thought you could say something to the sergeants."
Pox looked up from Volya's sword and shook her head. "Jennets, it's up to the surgeons. You won't do us any good if you try to fight and it's not healed. Likely it'd come apart at the first stroke, and you'd be worse off than ever. You can ask the surgeon."
Jennets scowled. "The last time I asked him, he said to quit pestering. Bones heal at their speed, he said, and not for wishing." "That sounds like Master Simmet. He's the sharp-tongued one. You won't miss Sibili anyway. We're all marching." "But I'll miss the fighting. And if Siniava's there..."
"You wouldn't have a chance at him anyway. You'll see enough fighting if you stay whole."
"I hope so. To break an arm, my very first..."
Jennets broke off as Stammel came up. He squatted beside them with a sigh.
"Well, Jennets, is your arm holding up?"
"Yes, sir, I was just wondering..."
"No, you can't fight with us at Sibili. Not unless we're longer taking that city than I expect. Pox, the Duke's enrolled a few men from Cha, Andrasat's faction, of course, and we'll have 6 of them in our cohort. You've gotten these well broken in. I'd like you to take on one of the new men."
Pox thought of several questions, but when she met Stammel's brown eyes, she was guided by their wary expression.
"Yes, sir. When?"
"Now."
Pox rose when he did, and left the rest where they were. When they were out of earshot, Stammel had more to say.
"This is new, Pox, taking new men during a campaign. The captain said it's because he wants us at full strength. I suppose that means he'll be recruiting all season. These men now, the Count vouched for them, and they look like fighters, but of course, we don't know anything about them. If you start having doubts, let me know at once."
He shot her a hard glance, and waited until she nodded.
Another thing. Down here they don't have many women fighters. You heard what the Count said. Well, I thought if we take these men, they'll have to get used to our ways. That's one reason I wanted you to help. Clear enough?
Pox nodded, though she still felt confused. It was hard to imagine strangers, outsiders, southerners, as part of the company. But she could see that Stammel had no answers, and possibly even more questions, so she asked nothing. He sighed again, and led her to a group of about 20 men, standing with the captains. Three of them had mail shirts, and four had bronze breastplates. The rest wore leather armor. They were all muscular and looked fit enough. Several of Pox's friends stood nearby, Bara, Vic, and Arnie. Vic raised his expressive eyebrow, but said nothing. Stammel turned away and came back in a few minutes with three more of Pox's cohort. He spoke to Arkelin, who pointed out six of the strangers. They followed Stammel.
Pox, this is Halleck, Stammel said.
Halleck was several fingers shorter than Pox, with sandy hair and mustache and pale eyes. Stammel went on.
Halleck, she'll show you where to eat and sleep, and what you're expected to do.
She?
Halleck's tone was derisive. Pox felt a prickle of anger.
What do you think I am, some little boy to take orders from a nursemaid?
Pox clamped her jaw shut. Stammel gave the man a cold stare.
Either you follow orders, Halleck, or you go explain to the captain that you don't want to join us and why.
The man opened his mouth, but Stammel gave him no chance to speak, no argument, obey or leave. Halleck glanced sideways at Pox and flushed.
Yes, sir.
Come along, said Pox, and walked off without looking at him. She felt his resistance, then a slackening as he gave in and followed her. She was glad she was taller. When they had walked some strides, she spoke over her shoulder.
Our cohort, Arklund's our captain, is loading today. When did you eat last?
This morning. Early.
He sounded grumpy. Then we'll eat now. Pox angled toward the cook's tent. What weapons do you use?
Sword, he said. Not like yours. Longer, and not so wide, or the curved blade Siniava's men carry.
Are you used to formation fighting? Can you use pole arms?
No. Where would I learn that? The only organized units around here are Siniava's, and I wouldn't fight for that.
The man spat, then lengthened his stride to come up with her.
Listen, are you really a soldier, not a cook or something?
Pox glared down at him and he reddened. Yes, I'm a soldier, as you'll find out soon enough.
More of one than you, I dare say, if all you've done is play around with a dueler's weapon. I hope you can learn formation fighting, or you won't be any use to us at all.
Your tongue's sharp, anyway, he said.
You can test my blade later, said Pox.
She led Halleck through the serving line, then to a loading crew. He was strong and willing to work. Pox tried to think better of him. By mid-afternoon, the loading was done. They went in search of the arms masters. Siger was already working with two of the other newcomers, these assigned to Doran's cohort. A number of the Duke's men stood around watching. It was always a treat to see the wizened little arms master drive a much bigger opponent around the practice ring. Finally, he called a halt, and the two men, puffing and sweating, moved out of the ring.
Not enough marching,
grumbled Siger to their backs.
More wins, what you want, and then an old man like me couldn't make you lose breath.
He turned to the circle of watchers.
Enjoying yourselves, eh? Well, you all need a workout. Suppose you, there, and you,
he pointed,
get busy with swords, and you four with pikes.
The crowds melted away. Pox and the others, with new men, stayed.
Ah, yes, said Siger when he saw them. What have we here? Let's see your paces.
He beckoned to Halleck, who stepped into the ring.
Sword? Asked Siger. Pole arms?
Sword, said Halleck. But not that short one. I've used a longer one, or the curved.
Siger grinned at him.
You'll learn. That's what I'm for, and Pox will teach you a lot.
He handed Halleck a blade.
Now, are you used to a shield?
I've used one.
We'll start without. Go slowly until you get used to the length.
They crossed blades, and Siger began his usual commentary.
I see you've done more fencing than military. That stroke won't work with this blade. You don't have the length. No, and you can't dance about like that in formation either.
He tapped Hollick's ribs when an opening came. When you don't have a shield, your blade must do its work. A little faster now. Yes. The clatter of blades speeded up. No, you're still jigging around too much. Stop now. As Hollick lowered his blade, Saiger looked around and motioned to Pox and several others. Form a line with him, he said. Pox, come over here and take my shield side. Now, what's your name?
Hollick.
Hollick, good. Now you'll see what I mean about staying in formation. These on either side will protect your flanks, as you protect theirs. If you stay in line with them, you'll be fine. Clear?
Yes, but there's three of us and only two of you.
Saiger glanced at Pox and smiled slightly.
That's no problem to us. Pox, put a banda on. We don't want you stiff at Sibylle.
Pox stepped to the pile of bandas and returned to Saiger's side. Facing her was Sif, of Doran's cohort, with Hollick in the middle and Vic on the far end. She found she could hold her own against him easily, with strokes to spare for Hollick. Saiger, despite Vic's aggressive attack, had breath and arm to spare as usual. He continued his commentary on Hollick's swordsmanship and found time to correct the rest of them. Hollick kept trying to shift to one side or the other, but found himself locked between his companions and his opponent's swords. Finally, he seemed to get the idea and began working with Vic and Sif. Sif, now that Hollick was doing better, pressed harder. Pox was acutely aware of her unprotected shield arm. She found herself countering strokes rather than pressing her own attack. Hollick almost made a touch on her. He grinned. That, thought Pox, is a mistake. She slipped the leash on her anger, forcing a startled Sif back and back again, and giving Hollick two good thumps with her blade. Saiger moved with her, stroke for stroke, and they pushed the others to the edge of the ring.
Hold, said Saiger.
As they lowered their blades, he said,
Hollick, you'll need to practice this way every day. Your blade work is fair, considering your experience, but your cross-body strokes are weak. That's why you shift so. Come back here, in a half-glass, with a shield, and we'll start again.
He turned to Pox.
Tell Stammel that Hollick needs the time with me, and see if they'll release you too.
Pox nodded. Come on, Hollick, she said. We'll get you a shield from the quartermaster.
What about a sword?
Not until I say you're ready, said Saiger.
Pox and Hollick walked back toward the quartermaster's wagon. Hollick was silent for a few yards, then said gruffly,
You're good with a sword.
I ought to be, said Pox cheerfully. Saiger spent enough yelling and putting bruises on me. She felt good.
Well, I didn't think you would be. I've never seen women fighters before.
Siniava doesn't use them at all?
Oh, I hear he's got a few girls. They duel and that at banquets and the like, and of course there's women with his army, but not for fighting.
He chuckled. Pox felt herself getting hot again. Things are different in this company, she said firmly.
I can see that.
He walked on a few paces in silence.
But I don't see how, why, a woman would want to be a fighter. It's hard work, dirty. You can get killed.
He sounded genuinely puzzled. Pox found herself suppressing a laugh. Hard work? Were you ever on a farm, working? No, I thought not. This is no harder than farm work I was doing at home, and is no dirtier than butchering sheep. As for getting killed, women die having babies if it comes to that. She glanced at him to see his reaction. His face was furrowed in a frown. Besides, she went on, I like fighting. I'm good at it, and I enjoy it, and I get paid for it. I'd make a very bad farmer's wife.
Well, but aren't you going to marry someday?
Pox shook her head. No. Some do, but not me. I never wanted to.
I just can't. Are there many women like you in the North?
Pox shrugged. I don't know. Some. You saw Captain Doran and Arnie at lunch. Maybe a fourth of us in this company are women.
I see.
He still looked puzzled.